Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
SB Nation and Underdog Dynasty present the Underdog Podcast.
Welcome everybody into another edition of the Underdog Dynasty Sunbelt Podcast. I am your host, Brian Stone, Georgia's Southern writer for Underdog Dynasty. Joined once again this week as we sort of wrap up the regular season here by Georgia State writer Zeke Palermo. Zeke, like I said, you know, we're in the last week of the regular season. This is the last game we're going to see from a number of teams in the Sun Belt at this point. It's kind of sad. You know, football's winding down, but we're going to get into conference championship time. We're getting into bowl bids, things like that. So from that perspective, it's pretty exciting.
Yeah, it's a really exciting part of the year. Unfortunately, not a ton of Sun Belt teams are making many moves. Obviously, none are making a CFP push. But aside from that, it feels like a below typical number of teams are going to be making a bowl game appearance. But nonetheless, excited to talk about, obviously, last week's slate of games, this upcoming week's slate of games, and look forward to what postseason action we may have.
Yeah, for sure. So let's start off with last week's games. I guess not a lot to talk about in this one, but Florida State absolutely rolled Louisiana 49-17. This game was over basically from the end of the first quarter on. Florida State laid on 21 unanswered to start the game. At halftime, this one was 35-3. This was just a masterclass of how to handle a lesser opponent from the Seminoles. And like I said, coming into this season, I didn't know what to expect out of Florida State in this game. I thought that if Florida State played in this one or had played to this point in the season, in preseason, how they had the last couple years under Mike Norvell, that they were maybe primed for an upset. But just absolutely no doubt who the better team was in this one.
Yeah, I mean, despite the scoreline and the real dominance, as you mentioned, it was 35-0 at one point in this game. I feel like UL put up a solid enough fight. I mean, 291 yards is by no means laughable. Louisiana only had five less first downs than the Seminoles. So, again, not a ton to add. This was a pretty cut-and-dry game. We knew what the outcome was going to be this time last week, but just unfortunate that Louisiana was unable to show a ton of improvement as compared to their last couple games. I mean, obviously they beat Southern last week, but before that against Southern Miss and Troy, those losses didn't feel like much of an uptick from those games.
Yeah, so they had real trouble, especially in the first half, containing the Jordan Travis, Seminoles quarterback, on the ground. He ran for two touchdowns in the first quarter alone. Trayshawn Ward also had two touchdowns rushing in the first half. Travis added another one with his arm in the first half to like I said, make it 35-3 at halftime. Is there anything sadder in sports than being down five touchdowns and kicking a field goal as time expires in the first half?
Unfortunately, not. You talk about those scores right before half being a momentum shifter, but obviously not one here.
No, when you're struggling to get anything going, on the ground, through the air, what have you, kicking a field goal, like I said, and cutting the lead to just 32 is not really going to cut it. Again, not a lot to talk about from the Sun Belt side of things. Chandler Field struggled to throw the ball in this one. As a team, Louisiana couldn't really run the ball. They ran for under 4 yards a carry total. Yeah, like I said, not a lot to sort of take away from this game other than, you know, Louisiana was just flat out classed. So Florida State moves to 8-3 with the win. Louisiana drops to 5-6 on the season. Getting into this next game, Zeke, I'm going to need some help since you watched this game fairly clearly, piecing this together. I don't know where. So Georgia State lost to James Madison 42-40. When I'm looking at this, I don't know where Georgia State got the points from, to be totally honest. I know they returned two fumbles for touchdowns, but when you look at the way that they scored, you know, particularly in the first half and took that 34-14 lead, I'm just sitting here going, okay, you kicked a couple field goals, you had some defensive scores, and you get the one long pass to Jamari Thrash. It just doesn't compute in my brain that they scored 34 off of the way that they played the first half, and it doesn't compute that James Madison had to come all the way back down 20 to overcome Georgia State. But that's sort of what happened.
I get what you're saying. You know, the math doesn't really add up based on, I mean, Georgia State only 257 offensive yards and only turned the ball over once. So it doesn't make a ton of sense. But if you really do break it down, two of their touchdowns were scoop and scores. So that's 14 of your 40 points, which brings your total down to 26. Then you add in two field goals, you got 20 points. So now you only need to make up three offensive touchdowns, which feels, at 257 yards, one turnover, three touchdowns is fairly feasible.
Yeah. You know, despite the close final score, Todd Senteo absolutely shredded Georgia State's secondary through the air. 21 of 27, 274, four touchdowns, no picks. Why do you... And I understand that pretty much every game that Todd Senteo has actually played for James Madison, that he's done this to other teams. I mean, even the game they lost, the Sun Belt game they lost to Southern, I mean, he was tearing them up through the air. Why do you think it was that Georgia State had so much trouble sort of containing the passing game of James Madison?
There's no real thing to point at. Georgia Southern's secondary is not extremely great. They've got some guys in the secondary, Antavius Lane being one of them, who you can point at and say that's a real playmaker in the secondary. But all season, it's not like Georgia State's been holding opposing quarterbacks to, you know, real mediocre numbers. I mean, Senteo was just incredibly efficient. He didn't throw an incomplete pass at all in the first half. And I mean, he... you know, a quarter of his throws were for touchdown. He was only averaging 10 per completion. So it was more of a, or 10 per attempt. It was more of a, it's not like they got diced up all evening. You know, he was just playing really sound 8, 10, 12 yard passes all afternoon. And that was more than enough to mount the comeback.
And if you can speak a little bit to Darren Granger's performance, I've talked about the Jekyll and Hyde sort of experience with him. You sort of get the Mr. Hyde this week. He completes less than half of his passes for 176 and a touchdown. Definitely didn't help Georgia State in this game at all. Why do you kind of think he had some of those struggles?
Granger is a unique passer, and I can't vouch whether this is him as a passer or the scheme, because I haven't had an opportunity in covering Georgia State to experience them without Granger. So this may be a him issue. This may be a scheme issue. His passing is, I mean, it's a lot of play action stuff. It's a lot of deep downfield sort of plays that's set up by an incredible rushing game. Throughout the game, I mean, Georgia State only ran for 81 yards, which is their lowest in a calendar in the past calendar year. And so if they're not capable of rushing well, this is true for any team, but Georgia State especially, with the type of offense they run where it's very, you know, high ceiling boom or bust type of plays, Granger just wasn't put in a situation where he could make those passes. I mean, like we were saying, Senteo wasn't going boom or bust. He was grabbing medium range passes. That's just not the type of quarterback Darren Granger is. That's not the type of offense Georgia State plays. So he just wasn't put in a situation to be successful. And I mean, part of that's his own fault. He rushed for only 31 yards, which isn't a small number for a quarterback, but he's expected to shoulder a bit more on a weekly basis.
All right. Well, Georgia State drops to 4-7 and 3-4 in Sunbelt play with the loss. James Madison improves to 7-3 and 5-2 in the conference with the win. Let's get into the next game here. App State, Old Dominion. This was another game where one team just absolutely outclassed the other in the first half, but it proved that Old Dominion, as they have the last couple weeks, just simply doesn't have enough offense to keep up with a lot of Sun Belt schools. App State jumped up to a 24-0 lead at halftime, pushed that out to 27-0 in the third quarter. On a Michael Hughes field goal, and then just sort of took their foot off the gas. And Old Dominion was able to score a couple touchdowns in the last 7 minutes of the game, but by that point it was far past over. I mean, you can say take this with a grain of salt because it is Old Dominion's offense, and they've definitely had some struggles, but a good defensive performance from App State, which is sort of a throwback to what we've seen in years past with them being able to just shut teams down on defense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, unfortunately for Old Dominion, Ollie Jennings is still out with injury, and this just kind of goes to show you how reliant they are on him. They did have a great receiving performance from Javon Harvey on 4 catches, 133 yards, 2 of those catches for touchdowns. But without Jennings, this offense has been stagnant. And even with him, it was fairly questionable at best. I mean, you remember when they played Georgia Southern, and you'll vouch for this, one of the worst defenses, if not the worst defense in the conference, and only put up 23 points. So it's just this offense as is so stagnant and so lackluster. And then you take out the one guy that you could rely on for yardage on any given week, it's just even worse.
Yeah, you mentioned the 2 catches that he had for touchdowns. I mean, factoring in the fact that he only had 4 catches for the whole game, you got to think that half of his production came in the final 7 minutes of the game when it was far out of reach. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I guess credit to him for catching those 2 touchdowns, but like App State may have been playing second and third stringers by that point in the game. I mean, you're up 27-0 going in the last quarter. And it doesn't feel like, you know, Old Dominion has much on the offensive side of things. Like, why not get some younger guys some run, especially in a conference game? But Chase Bryce played very well in this one. 15 of 21, 291 and 2 scores. 1 to Caden Robinson, 1 to Christian Wells. They ran the ball fairly effectively with Imani Marshall, who went for 137 and a touchdown. Yeah, I mean, disregarding the level of opponent they played, App turned in pretty much a complete team performance in this one, which I had personally kind of expected to see more of this season rather than just sort of in the last game or last penultimate game. But yeah, App improves to 6-5 this season, 3-4 in the Sun Belt. Old Dominion drops to 3-8 and is now 2-5 in Sun Belt play. Getting into this next game here, South Alabama barely, but they held off Southern Miss 27-20. I didn't expect this game to be as close as it was. I honestly couldn't believe at halftime that the score was 13-10. I watched a little bit of this game when the Georgia Southern Marshall game got out of hand. And I felt like I could pretty comfortably cut that one off, but I couldn't believe South Alabama was down 10-3 to start the second quarter, to be totally honest. We've talked about Southern Miss's offensive struggles. South Alabama, it felt like a team that could do pretty much whatever on offense, but you know, it took them 4 full quarters to sort of put together a complete game performance. Carter Bradley threw 2 picks, which is not ideal. clearly. But I, you know, credit to them. They didn't play overly well, but they did come away with the win in this one.
Yeah, in this game, Southern Miss, it seems like they've settled with Trey Lau as their quarterback, at least for these final three games of the season, after not really getting much tick up until November, which indicates to me, I mean, this is a team that since last season has been juggling, you know, three or four different quarterbacks, one of them being a true running back and Frank Gore. So that indicates to me that even though Lau, I mean, he was 18 for 33, under 200 yards in this game, I guess he's the guy going forward. He's a junior, so he's got at least a year more of eligibility. So barring some sort of transfer action, I guess Lau is going to be the guy into the offseason. And if you're Southern Miss, I mean, you take solace in the fact that you've at least now selected a guy to be the quarterback. Whether he's good or not is a separate question, but now you have somebody and you have that peace of mind of security of knowing at least we have a guy.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't be shocked to see Southern Miss as a player at the quarterback position in the portal, because, you know, it feels like while their offense has been limited, I mean, they've had some games where they've scored enough points where you think, like, if they just get a half respectable quarterback performance from one of these guys, you know, going back to Wilkie, or like you said, Trey Lowe or Lau or however his name is pronounced. I mean, if you even get a half decent quarterback performance, I mean, Southern Miss is probably a 7-win football team at this stage in the season. But yeah, it's been a struggle the last few years at the quarterback position for Southern Miss, and we're sort of seeing those results bear out. Like I said, Carter Bradley, I mean, you kind of have to take the good with the bad, but threw three touchdowns, threw two picks. You know, it is what it is. It was a really up and down performance. He had to come from behind to beat Southern Miss in this one. But like I said, you know, I think the mark of a good team is, you know, being able to pull out a victory when you're not as a team playing all that well, and being able to kind of tough it out and find a way to win games. And that's what South Alabama did against Southern Miss in this one. South Alabama moves to 9-2 this season, 6-1 in conference play. Southern Miss drops to 5-6 and is now 3-4 in the Sun Belt. Getting into this next game here, I wasn't surprised that Troy beat UL Monroe. I was more surprised about how it happened, because you and I talked about last week how we both thought this game would be under the number of 48.5. Troy is struggling to score points. UL Monroe, you know, is not going to be able to score against Troy's defense. And you know, we didn't trust the spread. We didn't trust the over-under. Well, Troy, you know, found a running game clearly by having, you know, Kimani Vidal go for 242 yards. That'll help scores, put some points on the board. They didn't ask Gunnar Watson to do a whole lot, which I guess is a winning formula at this stage. And they absolutely handled the Warhawks 34-16.
Yeah, I mean, neither, as you said, neither of us really trusted the spread nor the over-under. But it's important to note that ULM, as much as, I mean, this is the most Troy has allowed in a good handful of weeks. I'm trying to look now. I mean, going back to, I mean, Louisiana, they allowed 17, but before that, it was Western Kentucky back in week 5 was the last time Troy allowed more than 16, 17 points. So, I mean, credit to the Warhawks for scoring this many. Although it wasn't until late, it's not like they were scoring these points throughout the game. It was a last-second field goal. As we were talking about earlier, down 20-0, you score a last-second field goal to end the first half, and then you had two Chandler Rogers runs for score kind of near the tail end of this game. So I don't know if this is an indication that ULM was overperforming or outperforming Troy's defense. But yeah, you mentioned Kamani Vidal's rushing game, and what impresses me the most, and what will always impress me the most about a running performance, is that he wasn't breaking off 80-yard chunk plays. You know, his longest was 40. You take that 40-yard rush out, he still has 200 yards on 28 carries, and that will always impress me if you're not relying on big chunk plays to have a big game like that. And that he did. And I mean, this Troy rushing game found its footing, was able to succeed under a, you know, mediocre, passable Gunnar Watson performance.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's a good sign that they established a running game in this one. Maybe that carries over. You know, as it stands right now, barring next week's results, Troy is going to represent the West in the Sun Belt Championship game, having that tiebreaker over South Alabama. They're going to need as much offense as they can get if Grayson McCall is healthy enough to play for Coastal in that Sun Belt title game, because, you know, Coastal, whether you like it or not, they're going to be able to score some points. You know, it's going to be tough to keep them under 17 and hope that, like, I think it's a combination of two things. Number one, even if Troy held, let's say Troy held Coastal to 17, Troy, barring this game, has trouble putting over, you know, 20 points on the board in a given game. So, like, even if you get an all-time defensive performance from your defense in the Sun Belt title game, you're still going to have to score some points. I mean, you look, they just beat Army last week 10-9. So it's not as if, like, this offensive explosion is sort of a weekly occurrence that you can bank on. You can't really bank on much with Troy's offense. So, like I said, it's good that they found Vidal, and it's good that they sort of established the run in this one. Hopefully that keeps up throughout the end of the season. They play next week, and then obviously if they win, they play in the title game. But we'll have to see if these results sort of carry over from week to week. But they haven't been tangible or consistent thus far for Troy, so we'll have to see. But regardless, Troy picks up the win and then moves to 9-2 this season, 6-1 in Sun Belt play. UL Monroe drops to 4-7 and is now 3-4 in the conference. Getting to the second to last game of the night, Texas State was able to gut out a victory over Arkansas State thanks to a last second field goal by Seth Keller. That gave the Bobcats the 16-13 win. Sort of surprising that 29 total combined points were scored, given that the fact that both teams almost had 300 plus yards of offense in this one. But that's sort of the way it panned out. Both these teams, I guess, were struggling, you know, as far as the red zone goes, to put points on the board. But good win for Texas State. Good win for Jake Spavital. Still don't, am not 100% sure if what he's done this year is enough to keep him around for the foreseeable future.
Yeah, you mentioned the yardage to points ratio being a little surprising. I'm going to just disagree with you a little bit, because I think the greatest indicator of a good or bad team is the ability to turn yardage into points. Good, great teams turn yards into points. Bad teams don't. And I mean, Arkansas State at 3-8, Texas State at 4-7. I mean, these are two of the basement dwellers of the Sun Belt, not just the West, but the conference as a whole. So to be surprised by the near 600 combined yards of offense, or I'm sorry, the over 600 yards combined yards of offense turning into only 26 points is not necessarily astounding to me. It was just these teams were putting together 5-6 play drives. And when they weren't doing that, they were going 3-and-out. So to call this outcome or the scoreline surprising, it feels a little off base to me.
Well, I think it's surprising given how bad both these defenses have been every week. You know, it's one of those things where it's like both teams have bad defenses, but I guess the offenses for the respective teams couldn't find, you know, pay dirt, essentially.
Yeah.
Which is what's more surprising to me than anything, that this ended up being like a low scoring 16-13 game, when it's like Arkansas State is nothing but offense in how they're built. Now, that offense doesn't fire every week, but that's sort of the build of the team. Whereas Texas State, I mean, they've had some pop off, you know, games on offense. You know, App State comes to mind, you know, things like that. But FIU is another one. But like I said, just weird that like both of these teams are not known for their defense at all, mm-hmm. and the offenses just couldn't even put touchdowns on the board, which is strange to me. But another thing to think about, Texas State was down, you know, 10-3 going into the fourth quarter and is able to put up, you know, 13 in the final quarter to come away with the win in this one. Like I said, great win for Texas State. Any win for them at this stage is great. But again, I don't know what sort of the sentiment in San Marcos is as far as keeping Spavitt all around long term, and whether that this is, you know, something they want to keep pursuing or not. But regardless, Texas State moves to 4-7 this season and is now 2-5 in the conference. Arkansas State drops to 3-8 and is 1-6 in the Sun Belt. Like I said, I think we're coming to the end of the Butch Jones era, even at the end of year two. We're not seeing any improvement. I think it's kind of getting to be tough to make a case to keep him around. Yeah. So getting into the last game of the night, I said this in my preview for this game, and it played out exactly as I had expected. Marshall just absolutely, you know, dominated Georgia Southern, who, again, you can say it's injuries, whatever. The defense has never come to play this season. The offense has given up because they've lost so many receiving weapons. Marshall comes away 23-10. We got to see Rasheen Ali return for the Thundering Herd, which was good. He led the team in rushing. Georgia Southern's one bright spot was Jalen White with 143 yards. He had 100 yards in the first quarter, Zeke, and they didn't run the ball anymore after that. So that should sort of tell you where Georgia Southern's mentality is this year.
Yeah, this game harkens back or makes me remember the Southern game when they played Old Dominion. And I remember asking you that that following week, because that was another Jalen White game. He had, I believe, 120 rushing yards that game. And I remember asking you, is this a trend that we can see moving forward? And I think they proved that, or Southern proved this week that, yeah, if they need to run the ball, and obviously you mentioned they didn't really choose to after that first quarter, but if they need to, they can. I mean, this is the first time that they've all season that they've had even remotely close passing and rushing yards. And that was really just as disappointing, obviously, as the defense is offensively. That gives you some sort of silver lining. And as mentioned, Rasheen Ali, good to see him back on the field. And he and Laybourne were splitting carries, and they neither really seemed to, you know, lose a step. They both averaged, Ali averaged 4.9, Laybourne 4.1 yards per carry. So good to see him back on the field.
Yeah, like I said in this one, if anybody wants to see a team that has completely thrown in the towel or waved the white flag, whatever metaphor you want to use on a season, go watch Georgia Southern play App this weekend, because mm-hmm. you're going to see a team that offensively just, I mean, I don't know if Van Treese is hurt or the offensive coordinator or the head coach has kind of put the clamps on him to try to limit mistakes or what is happening. He hasn't looked good as of late. Like I said, they run the ball successfully to start the game and then they immediately go away from it. And then they want to throw the ball, but all of their receivers are hurt. So why are you doing that? Mm-hmm. And then defensively, I mean, they looked okay. This is probably one of the two better. This and the Old Dominion game are one of the two best defensive performances they've given up all year. And then the offense is just sort of like I said, waving the white flag, just saying, "Hey, let's get out of 2022 and move on to next year." But, like I said, you know, good to see Ali, good to see Laybourne be able to kind of both coexist within that offense. Cam Fancher has shown some improvement throwing the football, finished with 274 and two touchdowns. Like I said, this one, not only was it over by halftime because of the way that Georgia Southern was playing, but it also it was just boring to watch, like especially mm-hmm. the second half. As soon as when Marshall kicked that field goal to go up 23-10, I just cut it off because I was like, well, it feels crazy to say given the way that it started this year, but Georgia Southern being down 13 at this point in the season is an insurmountable outcome for the mm-hmm. Eagles to try to pull themselves out of, which is again crazy. But when you're putting up 384 yards of total offense, given the way that the offense played this year, it's pretty disappointing. But yeah, that's kind of what I expect from the Eagles at this stage. Marshall moves to 7-4 this season and 4-3 in the conference. Georgia Southern drops to 5-6 and is now 2-5 in Sun Belt play. So let's get into this coming week in the Sun Belt. Let's start with noon kickoff. Coastal Carolina is traveling to Harrisonburg to take on James Madison. I guess the betting public assumes that Grayson McCall, if he does come back this year, is going to hold out until the Sun Belt title game, given that the Chanticleers have clinched the berth, because James Madison is a 13.5 point favorite in this one. Over under is 54. If McCall doesn't play, give me JMU minus 13.5. Coastal is going to have a really hard time scoring points if Grayson McCall doesn't play.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of been the issue with them post-McCall injury. But it's a shame because I think with McCall, this is an incredibly, incredibly interesting game because James Madison, ineligible to make the Sun Belt playoff, Sun Belt championship game. But were they eligible, if they beat Coastal here, they would win the East. So, I mean, you could make an argument that a healthy Coastal and JMU, respectively, are the two best teams in the conference. So it's just a real shame that we got robbed, assuming McCall doesn't play, of what would have been a really, really just fun football game.
Yeah, this because also, if you think about it this way, James Madison, if they were in contention for going to the Sun Belt title game, this game would decide who represents the East. So this would be an incredible football game mm-hmm. if McCall had to go to get to the title game. But because he doesn't, Coastal can kind of just punt this game as a whole and just be like, all right, we'll see either Troy or South Alabama next week, you know, whatever. But yeah, I think JMU rolls in this one and sort of ends their season on a really high note by beating Coastal in this one. Another noon kickoff. This one's not going to be much competition either. South Alabama takes on Old Dominion. We've mentioned Old Dominion, you know, struggling offensively. South Alabama didn't look great last week, but Old Dominion just doesn't have enough weapons on the offensive side of the ball to keep up with the Jaguars. South Alabama is a 16-point favorite. Over-under is 48. I'm going to take South Alabama even minus the 16. Old Dominion just flat can't score points, man. Like, it's pretty bad at this point.
Yeah, this one could get ugly. And I think South Alabama's defense is also of note here. I mean, excluding their game against Georgia Southern 3 weeks ago, they haven't allowed 21 points. Going back to October? Yeah, going back to October, it's been since South Alabama has allowed it more than 21 points, again, excluding their game against Southern. So this could get – I mean, 16 feels really easy because I'm not sure Old Dominion's going to even score that many.
No, for sure not. I mean, I don't feel like it's too crazy to say that South Alabama has a better defense than App State at this stage in the season. And Old Dominion, it took them the final 7 minutes of that game to even put any points on the board. So, yeah, I think South Alabama absolutely is going to roll in this one. I think the Jaguars are going to be able to sort of check out of this one early and kind of put the backups in and give them some run. Another noon kickoff in this one, Georgia State takes on Marshall in Huntington, West Virginia. Marshall's a 6-point favorite, over-under is 45. Georgia State at this point is out of contention to make a bowl, presumably. given that the bowl selection committee doesn't have to do that thing where they don't have enough 6-6 teams, so they have to kind of step down and look elsewhere. Mm-hmm. I still think Marshall's going to win, to be totally honest. I think this one's going to be more back and forth, obviously, than the Georgia Southern Marshall game was. But I just think the two-headed rushing attack of Laybourne and Ali is just going to, I think, be too much for Georgia State's defense to sort of contain.
Yeah, if you like running, watching the rush game, this is going to be a really exciting one because, I mean, Marshall's got arguably the statistically two best rushers in conference history between Laybourne and Ali. And then the Panthers have three or four guys that on any given week can drop 100 yards. So if you like to watch the run, this will be a really fun game. But as you mentioned, I mean, even if the committee has to look at a 5-7 team, Georgia State's not even sniffing that conversation, especially considering, you know, recency bias, how poorly they played against JMU, you know, how they sold that game by after leading by such a considerable margin. So I like Marshall by, you know, more than a touchdown here. So -6 is another easy pick.
Yeah. Another fun little, I guess, mini storyline in this game is, you know, coming into that Marshall Georgia Southern game, you wouldn't know it by looking at Jaylen White's final stat line, but Marshall coming into that one had one of the best rush defenses statistically in the nation. Mm-hmm. Now, they got gashed by Jaylen White, like we mentioned, but is Georgia State able to run the football against that front that, I mean, frankly, not many teams have been able to put up significant yardage against Marshall? So we'll have to see how that all sort of pans out. Getting into the 3:30 kick, listen, I know the level of competition. I know who they're playing. Troy controls their own destiny, and they absolutely cannot slip up in this game, given that they have the tiebreaker over South Alabama as it sits today. South Alabama presumably is going to roll over Old Dominion, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't think either one of us are too, you know, I don't think we're giving Old Dominion much of a chance in that one. So Troy has to take care of business in this game. Now, I don't think they're going to have much trouble with it, but I'm going to go back to the well and say that 13.5 points as the favorite over Arkansas State is too much. I think Troy's offense is going to look more like it has in weeks past rather than last week. And I think it's good. I think Vidal, if they're going to cover this 13.5 point spread, I think Vidal is going to have to run for another 240, which I don't know is going to happen again. So I think Troy wins the game. I think Arkansas State covers. I think this one's going to be fairly low scoring, and Troy's going to win this one.
I got to agree with you. I think Troy wins maybe by 10 or so would be my pick if I had to put an actual number to it. But as you mentioned, you have to win. You cannot slip up for Troy, but that's just so incredibly unlikely. I mean, Arkansas State, when they played South Alabama, as you mentioned, the other team that's in the Western playoff berth conversation, the Red Wolves lost 31-3. And we've said before, we'll say it again, Troy is not necessarily very likely to put up that sort of differential, but they're going to hold Arkansas State to probably under 14 points, and it's just going to be a matter of Troy, can you get me more than two touchdowns? And I think they can.
Yeah, I think so too. I'm just saying, on the off chance that this game is 10-7 in crunch time and James Blackman has the ball and Troy, you know, Arkansas State by some miracle is driving down less than a touchdown, I don't know. I've seen crazier things happen than a team that was heavily favored like this dropping a game out of nowhere. So, yeah, as long as Troy is ready for it and knows, you know, obviously what's at stake and isn't looking forward to Coastal already mm-hmm. next year or next week, they should take care of business in this one. Getting into the 5 o'clock kick Eastern time, Southern Miss is traveling to Monroe to take on the Warhawks. Southern Miss is a 3-point road favorite, over-unders 51. I don't know, man. Maybe Vegas has figured it out. sort of the jig is up as far as, I mean, it took them 12 weeks, but I actually like all the favorites this week. I like Southern Miss as far as defense goes. They play pretty stout, solid defense outside of that loss to Georgia State. They score just enough, and Ewell Monroe has really been floundering these last couple weeks on the offensive side of the ball. You know, I know Ewell Monroe was able to gut out wins over Texas State and Georgia State, but then if you go back before that, it's like they lost by 17 to Arkansas State, who we both agree is not good. Coastal, they lost by 7, South Alabama by 7, Army by 24. So I think Southern Miss covers the 3-point spread in this one. I feel like Ewell Monroe is another team that's just sort of packed it in for this season.
Yeah, I guess with Southern Miss fighting for bowl eligibility here, a win would give them a 6th win. That creates some sort of a new dynamic in this game, but I just, Ewell Monroe is very good on the when they're at home. I want to get my numbers right. 3-1 at home in their one loss this year, and their one loss coming to Coastal. Compare that to Southern Miss, who while away is 2-3, so sitting about 500. So despite the extra pep in your step that you're going to get from the Golden Eagles because they're playing for something, as compared to Monroe, whose season is de facto over, I just like the trend here that Monroe plays well at home.
Okay, fair enough. Another 5 o'clock Eastern time kick. Louisiana is traveling to San Marcos, another team fighting for bowl eligibility with the Cajuns, to take on Texas State. UL is a 5-point favorite in this one. Over-under is 45. I think I'm going to take Louisiana, and it's solely because, like, I just don't trust Texas State to be able to score enough. Is my one big drawback. You know, last week they win a really close game against Arkansas State, who we agree is not good. They lost to South Alabama 2 weeks ago by 17. They lost to UL Monroe 3 weeks ago by 1 point. I know as far as common opponents go, both of these teams have lost to UL Monroe, but I just feel like Louisiana has too much defense for Texas State to sort of keep up in this one.
Yeah, especially coming off of that whooping to FSU, Louisiana is going to be a little hot. And then, as you mentioned, again, they're playing for something, whereas Texas State is not. So I've got to take the Cajuns here just because I think they're a better team with something to play for as compared to Texas State.
Yeah, I agree. So the last game of the night, 6 o'clock Eastern time kick from Statesboro, Georgia, App State travels to take on Georgia Southern. In the words of the Zoomers, they're having a mid-off. In this one, both teams are fighting to make a bowl. App State is 6-5, so they've technically already qualified, but they can sort of improve their bowl standing with a win here. Georgia Southern, like I said, is not going to win this game. They've thrown in the towel on their season. You've never seen a team quit as hard as they have with bowl eligibility on the line, but that's what they've done. App State is a 4.5-point favorite, over-under 63. I said this last week against Marshall, about Marshall in my preview. Do the following things if you can. Take App State straight, 4.5. Take the over team total for App State in points. Take the under team total for Georgia Southern in points. You might go 3-0. Like I said, you've never seen a team effectively throw in the towel harder with bowl eligibility on the line than you have Georgia Southern. Despite this being senior night, they've proven time and time again they just don't care about actually playing the game of football any longer in 2022. So, yeah, App's going to roll in this one.
Yeah, this one I really do think could get ugly. This is a team that you'll remember against Georgia State dropped 42 points way back when, against UNC dropped 60-some-odd points. So App State has the ability to just absolutely torch defenses. And if it's as bad as you say, Brian, I mean, Georgia State stands no chance.
Georgia Southern, yeah.
Thank you. I'm so sorry.
The last, think about this. At one point, Georgia Southern was a top 10 total offense in this country statistically. The last 2 weeks, they've combined to score 27 points.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't like they were playing world beater teams either. It was Louisiana, who, like we've said, is on the verge of qualifying for a bowl. And it's Marshall, who, I mean, while being the third best team in the East, you know, hasn't been without their hiccups this season either. So it's not as if Georgia Southern is losing to these, you know, great teams that they're just overmatched against. They've just, like I said, don't care. So as we sort of wrap up here, Zeke, last full week of Sun Belt games, what are you looking forward to the most?
I mean, it's got to be the JMU Coastal game, even though I feel like we've got a pretty good understanding of how this game is going to play out, assuming McCall doesn't play, and I can't imagine he will. I do think, I mean, this is the two best teams in the East, probably two best teams in the conference this year. And even with a team, Coastal, missing their the guy that really makes that offense go, I think it'll be an interesting matchup, one that's fun to watch, and one I'm definitely going to be keeping an eye on in between timeouts of the Georgia State game.
Yeah, I think, I mean, this is a rough week for Sun Belt matchups. I wish James Madison could qualify for the title game, because I think that would make this Coastal James Madison game a must watch. But the fact that Coastal is just sort of punting on this game makes it kind of a eh to me. I actually want to see Georgia State and Marshall, and it's mostly because I want to see which team is able to, like you said, run the football more, you know, I guess, to put it plainly. You know, obviously, me being a Georgia Southern fan and being a fan of a team that ran the option for many years, I'm the run still has a soft spot in my heart as far as an offensive strategy goes. And both these teams can run the ball well. And like I said, I want to see if Georgia State can run the ball against a Marshall team that's been good against the run up until last week. So yeah, that's one game I'm looking forward to the most. Zeke, as we sort of close here, like I said, last week in the Sun Belt, tell folks where they can find you on social media.
I am on Twitter at Zeke Palermo, ZekePalermo. Post about the podcast, post all of my Georgia State stories there. We'll probably have some postseason Sun Belt stuff going up pretty soon as well. Brian, I know you're on Twitter as well. Where can they find you?
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at Watch the Stone. Mercifully, I will be posting my last two Georgia Southern articles as this season, you know, goes up in flames, so to speak. But yeah, that will do it for this edition of the Underdog Dynasty Sun Belt Podcast.